Welcome back for another episode of Young, Dumb, and Righteous, starring your host, Philip and Nick. Today we're going to be talking about something a little different. So typically we're talking about faith and walking in the Spirit. Today we're going to be talking about the credibility of Jesus Christ. And this is going to be kind of a conversation between me and Philip, talking and reiterating the things that Jesus did to prove his credibility through history and through the things that he said. And the number one thing that, to me, proves it is the prophecies. And what the prophecies were was, in the Old Testament, there were things said that were going to happen that Jesus fulfilled. And while Jesus walked on this earth, he fulfilled over 300 of those prophecies. And historically, the Old Testament has been one of the most credible books of history, geographically, historically, and socially. Everything that it says has held to be true through archaeological findings and through just theory. And here's just a couple things to ring off of the different prophecies that were mentioned in the Old Testament that were fulfilled. And most of these in the beginning were just from Genesis. These are just from Genesis. So in Genesis, it says that there is going to be the virgin birth. So Jesus was born of a virgin. And the people, just as people took it to the death that he died on the cross, there was people that also believed it down to the beginning of Jesus Christ, that he was born of a virgin. And then in Genesis 5, it mentions the bodily ascension to heaven. So after Jesus had moved the tomb, he was ascended back into heaven. And then, you know, the seed of Abraham, and that all the nations will be blessed through the seed of Abraham. Who was Jesus? A descendant of Abraham. And through Jesus, we are offered eternal life, which is, I don't know about y'all, but one of the greatest blessings I personally have ever heard. And over and over and over in the Old Testament, this would happen. Jesus comes and he does it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no denying the fact that there was a man, and there are many historians that believe this fact, that there was a man named Jesus of Nazareth that walked earth. And then, at the end of the day, the Bible is not a storybook. The Bible is not a book you read to your children to help them fall asleep at night. It's a history book. Everything from beginning to the end, well, except for the very, very end, where it quite literally goes into what to the end, is kind of a little joke, I guess you can look at it there. But everything up into the end is history. It's everything that has happened, and then it prophesizes what will happen. That's fact. And that, as Christians, we believe that, but I think it's, this episode is hopefully to kind of shape your mind around the fact that this is real. Jesus did die on a cross. Jesus did rise from the dead. Jesus literally ascended into heaven. Jesus was born of a virgin. There were all these things that Jesus fulfilled in himself, and of the prophecies, there's 351 prophecies fulfilled in Jesus.
And there was actually more prophecies mentioned other than the ones that Jesus fulfilled. And the reason they are unfulfilled is because the time has to come in which those are. And I don't know if you guys have seen the news or if you've been on the internet for the past 10 years, but I just keep seeing this and then this and this, and the Euphrates River's drying up, which is, you know, like this giant, giant river that flowed for all of Earth and is suddenly starting to dry up. And I don't know, something about the fact that it's never been disproven, it just kind of, there's substance there. I'm telling you, I seen this one pastor, and he said it, and he kept reiterating it. It's worth considering. It's worth considering. Because I feel like history is disproven all, like, over and over again, and you hear of these myths that get debunked. But something about this has never been debunked. And outside of the literal and physical representations of the truth within it, we're also promised the Holy Spirit. Now, you're telling me that these drug addicts, right, are willing to flip their life just completely around. These people so caught up in, you know, some of the most addicting substances or activities in the world are willing to lay down their fleshly desires and follow the teachings of this man who says to deny your flesh. Like, as humans, it's not natural to deny our flesh. The only reason that we're willing to deny our flesh is through love. So by loving your significant other, you're willing to deny your flesh. By loving yourself and wanting the best for your health, you're willing to deny this substance, or you're willing to deny this activity that you know is only going to deteriorate you. So what I'm saying is this, it's really not natural to want the best for not only you, but for everything. And that's what Jesus taught, love God and to love your neighbor. And he says, you know, you're slapped on one cheek, turn it and let him slap the other. I don't know about y'all, but that is the least human-like phrase I've ever heard in my life. I feel like I grew up with a very, just a very down-to-earth family. But we were always like, stand up for yourself, you know. And I'm not saying not to stand up for yourself in certain situations, but if it's a situation in which it's something deeper, which, hate to tell you this, but we don't battle flesh and blood. We battle against the darkness of the cosmic powers and the current darkness that rules over us. And it's just so interesting that if you apply this, all the teachings of this book to your life, you're going to be radically changed. And not only are you going to be radically changed, but you're going to be radically inclined to tell other people about it. And it feels so unnatural to be in a situation in which your friends or the people around you are partaking in things that aren't of what you know you need to be doing, but you're still, you feel this kind of gut feeling to share the truth with them. And that's something that I've experienced. And it's a very unnatural feeling. You know, I'll go into this situation and I'll pray to God that I would be led from temptation and that what was meant for bad can be used for good. And he'll do that. And it's always in these hopeless situations in which all things are leading one way, but then they end up all going Yahweh. And it's crazy because the cross literally makes anything possible. The same way that that stone was moved away is the same way that he's willing to completely disintegrate the cancer in a body of that was told was going to die. There's just all these things that happen over and over again in which there is no hope, but God. And like that statement right there, but God, like all things are looking down. You see this earth is deteriorating day by day, and you just see more nonsense and more violence on the news day by day, but God. And it's like through everything, you can see that there is this one never-changing aspect of all of this. And he is with us. And through the physical son that was sent and walked, and I always say this, like, just as, you know, Gandhi starved himself for 30 days, just as, you know, Hitler and Mussolini were corrupt military leaders, Jesus Christ walked this earth and died, and creating a following that changed all of eternity, right? So everybody that came in contact with this man either wanted to give everything to him or wanted to take everything from him. There was no in-betweens. And the fact that so many people were willing to take it to death should really open your eyes about why did they believe that to be so true? It would have been so easy for them to say, you know, to deny it and say, you know, I'll say this to spare my own life, but through faith that they knew that there was something greater for them, and that by fulfilling the purposes that they were sent for, that they were going to have a right standing with God by, you know, walking into the purpose that he had for them.
Yeah, and to go into a little bit more prophecy, if you want to look around today at the things that are going on, the evil that's in this world, it tells us here in 2 Timothy 3:1-2, says, "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to their parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving," goes on to verse 3, "unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good." Going on to verse 4, "traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God." And it can continue to go on, but look around today. Look at the disrespect that we see day in and day out of to parents, you know, to kids who are just outright disrespectful to their parents, to people who love themselves more than they love anything else in this world. And a phrase that my pastor likes to use a lot is meology. There's a lot of meology in the world today. There's, you know, you have theology, you know, and which is the idea of theoretical or of otherworldly things, but meology is the ideology of yourself, of me. And that's what everybody is kind of focused on. Everybody's focused on themselves. Everybody's focused on their money. Everybody's focused on everything except God, right? They're boastful. Somebody gets a new truck. What's the first thing they do? They go to somebody else's house. "Look at this new truck I got." They finish up there. They go to somebody else's house. "Look at this new truck I got." And then what does that do? Now the next person's like, "Well, I need to make more money so I can get that new truck." So then I can go to their house and be like, "Hey, look, I got this new truck." And it's just a continuous cycle. Instead of going, "I'm happy with the life that I have. I'm happy with the things that I have. I'm happy with where God has put me in my life, that if I go and buy a new truck, I did that because God allowed me to do that. God put me in a position to be able to do those things. I shouldn't necessarily want to go out and buy a new truck so I can go and show it off to people. I shouldn't want a new truck or a higher salary so I can show off to people. I should want a higher salary because I know I can do things that will greater my purpose here on this earth, whether that means donating more money, whether that means providing more food for people who need it, whether that means, you know, being able to have more rooms in my home to bring in people who don't have homes, to help rebuild people who are thrown out on the streets that don't know what they're going to do in their life when they're on their bottom. And I can bring them into my home and I can say, "Guess what? I'm here for you because Jesus allowed me to be here for you, because God allowed me to be here for you." We are in those days where people are focused on me. People are focused on money. People are not, they throw God away. They completely discorn God. They've pretty much thrown him into the mud, and they've talked about him as if he's an unloving God and just not true.
I think one thing that's kind of scary to think about is how he's talking about this idea of me, you know, this idea of this scandalous, adulterous generation. And you think, if you think back to like the 50s, 60s, 70s, you think of the life that your grandparents used to live. When your grandparents look at, not you, but they look at this generation and they look at the people that they associate with this generation, I feel like it's always mentioned like things aren't how they used to be, and just the way kids act. And then it's like from the 50s down to, you know, me talking to my older siblings, and my older siblings, they graduated 10 years before me, and they're like, "Man, it's like kids aren't the way they used to." And now me and you as 2020 graduates, we look at people that are graduating in 2024 or 2025, and we're like, "Man, these kids are getting like..."
It's exponential.
It's like we don't want to say evil, but it's like you see that like something's getting a hold of generations. And as time goes, it gets worse and worse and worse. But one thing that I think was super cool, there's a pastor named Josh Howerton. He's a preacher of a big church in Houston. And he came and guest preached at 1122. Started following him on Instagram. And he was talking about this today on his story. He said, "So as this earth is deteriorating away, what did Christ call his followers? He called them the salt of the earth. And what's the purpose of salt? What, there wasn't always freezers. There wasn't always refrigerators. Salt was used to preserve. So we're not supposed to give into the decaying of this earth. We're called to preserve, you know, what he has, what is right. So it's like, yes, the will of the Father and time is going to take place and prophecies are going to be fulfilled, but we are still called to fight against evil and still called to further his kingdom. So as we see all these things being legalized, and just society's like perspective on certain ideas starting to be changed, it feels naturally for us to progressively change with them, but that's not how it is. We're supposed to stand on what we know is true and preserve what he has told us to do. You know, and each of us have our own sins, but we can definitely see what is being pushed through Congress and through our school systems to try to be able to change. Literally generations are being changed right now through what is being shown on TV, by what is being taught in schools. And especially, you know, the youth is being targeted over and over and over again. And I feel like there's never been a time that has been more scary for the youngins. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if it isn't a fruit flavored vape, you know, it's a colorful porn website.
Yep.
And if it's not that, then it's, you know, there's just always something that's, and it's crazy how the kids are being targeted.
Well, it's even put into the cartoons and things. Oh, of that yeah. nature. And like things you just don't notice. And I say that like we didn't have it in our cartoons. Our cartoons had very subtle things that as kids we'd never noticed. But I feel like the kids of today pick up on things a lot quicker than we did because Absolutely. They have the internet. I mean, right at their fingertips. I mean, how many kids today are born and within 6 months have a tablet in their hands? I mean, literally. I mean, we have a whole generation of kids raised on tablets now. I mean, that's a scary thought to have. You know, they have all this instant access to things that, you know, we didn't necessarily have until we may have reached a little bit older of an age. Not to say I wasn't still young when I accessed some of the stuff that I've watched and some of the things that I had seen. But that doesn't necessarily make it any better.
Yeah.
Well, our kids shouldn't be exposed to porn at, you know, 8, 9 years old. That's just not how it should be.
Yeah, I remember, like, my first interaction with something that was inappropriate of a woman. It was a cartoon. It was 1,000% just a cartoon that showed a little too much yeah. of a woman that I shouldn't have seen, that started these ideas in my head that led down this different path. And, like, when you think back to, like, the early 1900s, or say late 1800s, it was a woman's ankle. It was a woman's ankle that couldn't be shown.
Oh, yeah.
And then as time went by, that wasn't a thing anymore. And then it was just like the woman's cleavage that couldn't be shown.
Yeah.
Or it was, you know what I'm saying? And then as time went by a little more, it's like, oh, well, that's okay as long as it's a one piece. And then now it's a two piece. Now it's just underwear. And now it's even smaller. And now it's like if you go to some of the most worldly places, you know, like say Miami or New York or a music festival. Or
they're hardly wearing anything.
They're not wearing anything. And it's like, dude, how as time things just get lower and lower, and then it's just mind blowing, you know?
Yeah. And it sounds like such a double standard, but when you really think about it, the modesty of women has gone completely out of the window.
Right.
I mean, you can't step on a beach anywhere, I don't think anymore, and not see some woman in a thong bikini, just cheeks everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, it's as funny as that is to say on here, it's the truth. And as men, we notice it. We look around, we're like, are their titties are just boom out there.
And the funny thing, like you say, the double standard. But me and my friend, we just got back from North Carolina. We were doing some hurricane work, and one thing he kept mentioning over and over and over again: why is the dude in the passenger seat? Why is the girl pumping the gas?
Yeah,
hey, you see what I'm saying? So there's these things that are changing in women, but dude, men have changed even more. And like men, the way men have changed is by not being men and not even knowing what a man is. Like what? It's so funny. Like if you get TikTok's idea of what is a man, and I'm not saying that a man should be a big, burly, bearded. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that like there's any kind of physical aspect of what a man should look like, but a man stands on his beliefs. A man doesn't sway. He doesn't ride the fence. The man fights for his family. The man's a leader. And I feel like you just see, one thing I like to say is, you just see a lot of masculine women. You see a lot of feminine men. And the thing is, what does a masculine woman come from? A feminine man.
Yes.
A feminine man creates a masculine woman, because the man isn't doing his role, in which makes the woman feel like she has to overtake that role. And if it's not that she feels like she has to take that role, it's because she feels like she's going to have to protect herself. You know what I mean? And that's, men are the protectors. And so if men aren't taking care of, you know, being that protector and being that leader and standing in the gap for your family, then she's going to feel that way.
Yeah, it's funny. We mentioned prophecy earlier, but it says it in Genesis, right after Adam and Eve have eaten off the tree of knowledge. It says in King James, in Genesis 3:16, it says, "And you will desire to control your husband, but he will rule over you."
Mm.
So I think there's a piece of that, and something we actually talked about in Bible study, and what kind of made me think about it was the fact of the matter that I think there was a point in Genesis where it literally points out the fact that at some point, a man and a woman's place will slowly shift over time, because the woman's desire will always be to be in the man's place, right? If you think about it, Eve took what she started listening and went off of her own, you know, went off of her own fruition instead of listening to her, to Adam for one time, and it created this chain of events. And Adam, one time, listened to Eve when he probably shouldn't have.
Yep, and that. And that's funny, because it's like, that was the moment that she, that was the moment that wrong began in women. And then the second part, Adam followed.
Yep.
Adam should have said,
nope.
H-E double hockey sticks, no. Like, we know the truth. We know where we're going if we take that or if we stay here. And he gave into it. So it wasn't Eve's fault. It was both of their fault. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And like, just the same reason that, you know, women are, you know, the things that are happening to women, it's not women's fault. And it's, and like, it's man also has a big 100%. Fault in it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
I'm not shifting the blame on anybody.
Yeah. That's why it upsets me when it's like, you see so many men that are like, oh, well, this girl, it's like, bro, well, you know what I mean? Before you want to judge her spec, look at your log, because we all got it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're all focused on the wrong thing. This isn't flesh and blood. This is back to Ephesians 6. You know what I mean? We're battling something way deeper than this. We're only here to preserve it. You know what I mean? And not to throw stones at others, but to feed others with love, and that they may be able to see the truth, and that they see that this is all out of love. You know, and you see, like, one of the biggest movements in the world of women is feminism. You know, and that's, you know, being the leader, and we don't need men. I'm not saying that you need men, but I'm saying that biologically, we're made to be suited for each other. You help me, I help you, and, you know.
I think that, I think a man and a woman are the best pair you could ever have in the world, because you have just the strict determination of a man, but you also have the emotions and the actual, like, caring of a woman. Most men don't care. They ask any man. He does not care. Women care.
Sometimes. Why is men's mental health an issue in today's time? Because they just want to keep going and keep being resilient, keep being determined, keep going, but without receiving the love and affection and compassion from the woman that is needed to keep that sustainable. You know what I'm saying? It's like trying to go to work all the time, but you're not getting rest and you're not eating well. You're going to get burnt out. And it's just like, if you're eating well and you're resting a lot, but you're not working a bunch, you're going to get fat and happy. You know what I mean? But you're going to be broke, and you're not going to be having things. Things aren't going to be getting done that need to be done. And it's this constant feeding of each other. You know what I'm saying?
And this is, I'll be honest with you, in today's standards, is probably the most sexist thing I could say on here today. But there is a reason why, for so long, the roles in America and across the world was for the woman to take care of the home and for the man to go and work and provide. The reason being is because as natural human beings, the way we were created, this is not having anything to do with how I feel or my bias on it. It's just if you look at the basic fact of how we were formed as people, women are more caring and they're able to take care of a home better than a man can. And a man is able to go out and provide and get resources for the home better than a woman can. That's just how things are. Goes back to the fact of men naturally are born stronger. Naturally. They have testosterone pumped into their bodies that goes back to primal. I don't care how you want to look at this. Goes back to the primal days of having to go out and forage for your food and care for these things. And you would bring that back home. And the woman would take care of the home. She'd make sure the kids were doing what they were supposed to do. And then that has evolved over time to where it turned into, well, she was able to cook and she was able to clean while the man was at work making money and providing for his home. She made sure that the kids were fed. She made sure that the kids went to school. She made sure that the kids were educated and taught the ways of the home.
And that's through caring for them that she was willing and wanting to do those things. You know what I'm saying? And a man feels like those are things that need to be done, but primarily most of the time it's not things that they're wanting to do. A man, me specifically, I want to be out with my hands dirty, getting muddy, or doing something with my business.
I think a man is more focused on making sure that there's resources there.
Exactly.
Not that the resources are being used efficiently. And that's where a woman shines.
Right.
Is using the resources efficiently.
It's like if we were, you know, if we were F-250s and Camrys, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Camrys aren't going to be out working, supplying, getting things done, and the F-250 is going to be at home taking care of the youngins. There's going to be a lot of physical potential in that F-250 that's not going to be used, and then there's going to be a lot of things in that Camry that are going to be getting exhausted. And I just think that, like, biologically, men are 30% bigger than women, just on average. It's not a coincidence. You know what I mean? Like, we are literally made to go longer. We're made to fight harder. We're made to, you know, just keep going. And not that women can't do it, but they have specialties in other areas in which they can be more efficient in what they're actually getting done.
Yeah.
And being satisfied by doing and actually like doing.
I think the best way to sum that up is the fact that women are natural caretakers.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Men just aren't. We're not as compassionate as women are. I think that's the biggest thing that I've struggled with the most going through life. And some of it I've kind of accepted and some of it I've tried to change a little bit is I have very little compassion. It's very much something will happen and I'll go, that sucks, and move on. Where a woman will go, we'll cry about it. She will, you know, she'll think about it for a week.
Yeah, let's feel
two
about
weeks.
It.
Yeah, and she'll talk about it. And she'll delve into it on such a deeper level that, to me, in my mind, it was just, well.
We didn't have to go there.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it was an event that happened, and the less I think about it, the better.
Yeah, I think, like, how many men do you know that have decorational plants that are still alive? I just feel like every single person I've ever met or came in contact with that likes plants and has a bunch of plants is always a woman. And I'm not saying this isn't like to make this sexist. I have plants, right? I have probably like 8 plants in my apartment, and they're all nice, pretty plants. But it's like this constant battle of trying to keep them alive. Like it just, I'm like, oh, I can water them in the next couple of days. You know what I mean? And I just think that's just like, it's rooted in me, you know, no pun intended.
Something with like plants for me as a man, and for me is if it doesn't provide something that I'm going to use,
right?
What's the point of having it? Like, yeah, it looks good. Like, I like looking
provides
at pretty
the
flowers.
Vibes.
Yeah, it's like I like looking at pretty flowers, but is it worth the effort keeping them up if, you know, if they only look good?
Yeah, my mom always had flowers growing up, and she always would spend, like, her whole entire Saturday just tending to her pretty flowers. And I always had that exact same mindset. I'm like, Mom, why don't we grow, like, corn or, like, boiled peanuts?
Something like they, I'll eat.
Yes. Yeah, like they come out of the ground boiled peanuts. There's peanuts. But like looking back now, like when I bring people over to my mom's house, guess what everybody says? Oh, we love the flowers. This feels like home. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And she worked so hard to create this idea of something I never would have saw.
That's something like a man can make a place that feels comfortable, but a woman can make a place feel like home.
Like a home, yeah.
That is where a woman shines. Right. She can make a place feel like home.
Yeah, and that's, I think, like, I don't know. Like, you can have everything in the – you can have a giant mansion, but if it doesn't feel like home, what's the value in it?
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I just think that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's history. It's biology. It's science. It's the truth. It's the way, the life. This is Jesus Christ, man.
It's everything. God created everything. But we appreciate every one of you guys. We're going to have to wrap it up here. We thank you, everybody that's watched, everybody across the world. We see you. We don't physically are able to see you across the screen, but we definitely feel your presence. I definitely check the views every single time I post. It means a lot to me, everybody that's come on here that's listened to us, especially anybody that's made it this far to hear this part. You're truly special to us, and we hope that you continue to spread our message and to help us gain more followers. We really appreciate it because Jesus is the important part here. Me and Nick, we're just two names. We're Philip and Nick on a website somewhere on your screen, but Jesus is history. Jesus was real, and Jesus will be the future and the way for the rest of the world.
And if you guys have any questions or if you want any topics to be discussed in any other episodes, just be sure to go shoot us a DM on Young, Dumb, and Righteous on Instagram. Thanks for tuning in on another episode, guys. Stay blessed. We love y'all.